inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
I've got a real interesting guest joining us on the podcast today. He's a rental property investor, but he also owns a property management company where he manages 400 rentals. So he's got an interesting perspective because he sees things as an investor, but he also has a lot of experience because he's dealt with so many properties and so many tenants. So today he's going to share with us a bunch of ways to make your rental property more profitable. So let's take a really quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll meet Mike Connolly from Fremont, California. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified. And I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. Having to evict a tenant is painful. The best way to protect yourself from evictions is to screen tenants, and the best way that I know of to screen tenants is TransUnion Smart Move. It's a really valuable online screening tool delivering credit, eviction, and background reports in minutes. And their proprietary tenant credit check predicts evictions 15% better than generic credit scores. See why over 4 million landlords have used SmartMove to make better leasing decisions. Use code RENTAL25 at checkout to save 25% at tenantscreening.com. That's code RENTAL25. At tenantscreening.com. Mike, let's start off with you telling us a little bit about your property management business.
I manage predominantly single family homes, about 400 homes, and about 100 multifamily properties. So a total of about 500 doors. I've been at property management for a long time. I like to tell people that I've been managing property since I was five. My parents noticed in the sandbox, because I have two younger brothers, that I would kind of build a little wall of sand around my toys. And so my parents knew right then and there that that kid's going to be a property manager someday. Since I got out of college, I have been managing property.
Awesome. So that's great. So you've got a ton of experience. And you know what I think is going to be interesting here is to pick your brain, because you've got kind of a different perspective as a property manager. So let's talk about some of the things that you've done throughout your career to help your clients have more profitable rentals. So the first thing that you do when you're taking over a property from someone is you actually price the property below market value. Why? That sounds kind of counterintuitive. A lot of people to get top dollar want to price it as high as they can. But why do you find it's better to actually come in a little bit low?
Okay. Well, that goes back, Dan, to the quality of the tenant. I want a tenant with at least, this is in our area of the Bay Area, a 680 credit score, income that is three times the rent, and excellent rental history. And so that kind of tenant, that high quality tenant, has choices. They're looking at several different houses. And so in order to attract that tenant to my house that I'm managing, I want to be slightly below fair market, just $50 to $100. That way I'll attract that tenant. He'll feel good when I show him my rent analysis and he sees that it's a little below market. He's going to stay longer, I believe, take better care of the home, as opposed to a tenant who feels like he's paying a little over market, where he's being squeezed, and may think of leaving after a year or two and feel a little resentful, you know, have more maintenance issues.
So that makes a lot of sense. And then what about when the lease comes up? Do you generally try to raise the rent for the second year, or do you try to keep it the same to keep the tenant in there?
Great question, Dan. Well, that all depends on the rent analysis that we do 2 months before the lease expires. So all of my tenants are on a 12-month lease. Some actually a little longer, because we want all of our leases to expire around May or June, because that is a great time for the tenant to find a new rental, and it's a great time for the landlord, for us, to bring in tenants, as opposed to November or December. So what we do is a rent analysis about 60 days before the lease expires to see if rents have gone up in the neighborhood. And we'll have owners say, Mike, I've got to have a rent increase this year. My taxes have gone up. My expenses have gone up. We've got to raise the rent. And I remind the owner that their expenses have nothing to do with the fair market rent. The only thing that we look at with the rent are comps in the neighborhood.
That's a really good point. I think that's something that a lot of people miss, that your expenses have absolutely nothing to do with the rent amount. You've got to look at what the competition's doing, and you've got to price your property competitively. So I think that's really smart. Now, with the length of the lease, this is the number two thing here, is that if a lease does come up in, say, the winter, in November or December or something, you won't sign a year lease. You'll get them on a shorter lease so that the lease comes up in May or June. Tell me kind of how you position that.
Actually, Dan, if a lease were to expire in November or December, we would want to sign an 18-month lease with the tenant so that it expires the following June. And if I were to sign a lease, let's say here in September, then it would be a 9-month lease. So nothing, you know, usually between 9 and 18 months. And then the following, when that lease expires, then we go year to year.
Do you ever have any problems with tenants maybe being leery about entering into a lease for that long? Or is it all in how you position it to the tenant?
Most tenants renting houses are going to be there for at least 2 or 3 years.
Right. Okay.
And we always say, I can understand you wanting to do that, but no, we go year to year, 12 months at a time.
Now, another thing that I think is a really good thing that you're doing is that when you decide on a rent price, you're not married to that price. After 10 days, you're looking at that price and adjusting. Tell me, walk me through how that works.
Okay, well, basically, when I decide to on a price, I run it by the owners, make sure they're fine with it. Some will say, Mike, I want another $100, or I want another $200. I believe that's too low. And what I'll do is actually give them a probability of the home renting based at the price they want. So the average rental, Dan, for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house here in the Bay Area where I manage houses is right around $3,000. Mm-hmm. The rents are very high here. And if an owner say he wants $3,200, I will let him know that I give that about a 10% probability of it renting here in the next 21 days. If we were at $3,100, a 25% probability. But if we were at $2,990, then I give it a 60% probability. So I always try to quantify numbers for the owner. And then I will run the ad at a certain price. And if I'm not getting several leads per day off of Zillow, then I believe the home is priced too high. If I'm only getting one lead a day, or maybe one lead every other day at the end of a week or 10 days, I'm dropping it $100.
Mm, yep. So is Zillow your main marketing source? Is that where you find most renters are looking today?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say 70% of my inquiries come off of Zillow, Trulia, Hotpads.
Okay.
All owned by Zillow.
Now, let's talk about the ad that you're putting on Zillow, because you outline your credit requirements in the ad. Why do you think that's better? Is it just because you're letting people weed themselves out?
Absolutely, Dan. You're not wasting your time or theirs by putting in the tenant requirements at the bottom of the ad. So all of my ads state that the tenant must have a certain credit score. In most of my cities, it's 680. Income, 3 times the rent, excellent rental history, no smoking. Mm-hmm. So that eliminates a lot of inquiries from tenants that call in.
Do people read it? I always find tenants, like, they don't even read that, you know, or they'll think, well, maybe they'll make an exception for me. Do a lot of people still reach out to you that don't meet your requirements?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
And if I ask somebody their credit score and they don't know it, chances are it's not going to meet the requirement.
Right. Yep. All right. Tell me about photography. Now, you always take professional, or you have professional pictures taken for your listings, right?
Correct.
You don't do iPhone pictures or something. And I think this is interesting because I know, you know, when you look at listings for houses for sale, a good realtor is going to have professional pictures taken. But I feel like a lot of landlords are just taking pictures with their cell phone and just throwing up pictures that maybe don't show the property in the best light. Do you find that it's actually worth it? Because when you look at the cost to get a professional photographer to come over, it might be a couple $100. Do you find that you get a good enough return on that to make it worthwhile?
I want to say without question.
Okay.
There's been statistics done, I know, in real estate sales where professional photography makes a difference in terms of number of hits that a home gets, the days on market. And I believe the same is true with leasing a home. So all of my competition, self-managing owners and other property management companies, all of them use their iPhone to take photos. Mm-hmm. They take 5 or 6 photos. They're average at best. Most of them are horrible.
Yeah.
And they just don't put your property in a good light.
Yeah.
My photographer comes always in the middle of the day to shoot my homes. He's only there maybe 20 minutes, takes 10 to 12 photos, but he gets dimension. He's able to get make rooms look larger and just gorgeous.
Yeah.
So
it's really amazing what a professional photographer can do. The last property I sold, we had professional photos taken, and looking at the house, I couldn't believe how good it looked. I mean, it looked way better than it did in person.
We almost used the standard of a hotel room. When that door swings open, you want it to look and smell and feel as clean as a hotel room.
Right. Now, as rental owners, we're all trying to get the highest return on investment that we can. So a lot of times owners are rehabbing properties, trying to be able to make the property better. But I think you can over rehab a property or make it too nice for the neighborhood. How do you advise your clients on what to rehab and what not to?
Okay. Well, Dan, you make a good point about over rehabbing. So many times I walk into an owner's house where he's called me to inquire about my services, and he's already done the rehab. He's hired it out, and I walk in, and most often he's either done too much or not enough or the wrong kind of rehab. So rehab for selling a home is not much different than the rehab needed for leasing a home. I start with the floors, and here in the Bay Area, almost all owners and landlords are going with laminate flooring over carpet. Mm-hmm. Laminate is such a great value. It lasts forever, and you never have to replace it. Tenants want it. It's pet friendly. It's hypoallergenic. So I always recommend laminate. Then we look at the paint on the walls. We then look at the kitchen counters, quartz versus granite. We look at the kitchen cabinets, whether we can paint them versus replacing them, putting on new hardware. And we move into the bathrooms and we see what needs to be done with the vanities and the faucets and the tubs and the showers. Then we look at the garden, the front and backyard, to make sure that the garden looks nice. I always recommend low irrigation gardening as opposed to lawns. So every recommendation I make on rehab has a dollar amount. For instance, if we put laminate in over carpet, that's going to equate to $100 a month in rent. And if we remodel a bathroom, both bathrooms, then that's another $50 a month. So, you know, the owner can kind of quantify the investment that he's making. And we always tell owners that for every dollar you put into rehab, you're going to get back at least a dollar and a quarter to $1.50 in added rent.
Mm-hmm. Plus, hopefully, a better tenant, too. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Average house, average condition is going to attract an average tenant.
Right.
A good house is going to attract a good tenant, and an excellent house is going to attract an excellent tenant.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. Now, what about pets? Do you advise your tenant, your owners, to allow pets, or like, do you have a take on that?
A very strong, Dan, because most of the owners that I sit down with when I'm making my presentation on why they should hire me as a property manager, they almost always say, "Oh, and Mike, we don't want pets in the house." And then so what I do is I go over all the benefits of advertising small pet negotiable. So we're looking at one pet under 20 pounds, because here in our neck of the woods, these little teacup dogs are so popular right now. And we talk about the benefits of a small pet. Number one is you're going to have many more applicants, many more people looking at the property than you would if you were to advertise no pets allowed. Second of all, it's going to make you more profit, because if I have a home that's at $29.90 small pet negotiable, and an identical home next door, in every way it's identical, is $28.90 no pets, then my home at $29.90 is going to rent faster.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to make you more money each month. The tenant will stay longer, and they're going to be happier. And oftentimes, the tenant will try to sneak in a pet anyway.
Right, right, right. What about charging pet rent or an extra deposit?
I also get a $500 non-refundable pet fee for my owner, and the tenants have no problem paying that. I don't charge them a monthly rent for a pet, just a one-time non-refundable pet fee.
You know, that's something I've debated about, whether to charge a pet fee that's non-refundable or have a refundable fee, because I feel like if you make it refundable, it kind of incentivizes the tenant to not let the pet destroy the house. On the other hand, the pet's probably going to do some damage to the house, so it's nice having that extra $500 fee. So have you found that the non-refundable fee, it just works better?
I have. Number one, it's it goes to the owner. I mean, that goes in his pocket for allowing a pet. And I have never, for let's say a $3,000 a month house, we're collecting a $3,000 deposit. I've never seen a pet do more than a couple hundred dollars
right.
worth
That's
of damage.
True. That's
a
true.
A small, under 20-pound pet that is owned by a high-quality tenant.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to have an aggressive breed. They're at most going to maybe scratch a door. And never seen it even come close to exceeding the deposit.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I picked up on when you were talking about rent amounts, that you weren't saying $3,000, you were saying $29.90. Do you always try to end in 90 when you're pricing a property?
I do, yes. See, grew up in the furniture business. My dad owned a chain of furniture stores, so you would never see a sofa in my father's store priced at $500.
Yeah.
It was always $499. A lamp, $199. So I grew up with nines. And I've also looked into, just research on pricing anything ending in nine. And it has a psychological effect.
Yeah.
So the difference between $29.90 a month for rent as opposed to $3,000 is a lot more than $10.
Right. Yeah, it's funny. You know, I always think that, you know, as people, we're smarter than that, but I think we're not. I think when it comes down to it, that you feel better about a price ending just a little bit below the full number. That's interesting. All right. So the last thing I want to ask you about is a referral fee. So for some of your multifamily properties, you'll incentivize tenants to refer other tenants. Walk me through how that works.
Oh, well, you have in the multifamily properties that I manage, a number of large apartment complexes, a lot of 2 to 4 unit properties. You have a vested interest with the existing tenants in who moves in next to them and or who's moving in down the hall. So by posting in the laundry room and on their doors, an apartment complex here in town that I recently had a vacancy, I offered a $400 referral fee to all the existing tenants if they could refer somebody that would take the vacancy. And I've gotten a lot of referrals that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because people, they all have friends and relatives that they would love to have move in close to them.
Yeah, and so, I think that's genius because it makes your current tenants more sticky. If their friends are living there or their family's living there, it makes them less likely to leave. So I think that's great. But you found you don't do that with single families, right?
No.
Okay. And I guess just because you don't, it's just different. Is that why you don't do it, or it just wouldn't work as well?
Well, I wouldn't know how to do that. You'd have to put a flyer on every
it's just more efficient.
Houses on the block.
Yeah.
What I do, Dan, believe in is a for lease sign, a nice for lease sign in the front yard, because. And a self-managing owner can get a nice sign at any hardware store. But that's important, not just for drive-by traffic, but also for neighbors in around the house. Because, again, they are interested in seeing a possible relative or a good friend move right in next to them.
Absolutely.
And so I've had a lot of people call me off my sign that have said, you know, I live right across the street and my sister would love to move into the house. And I, of course, my first question is, do you know her credit score?
Well, that's great. Mike, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. This was, I think, really informative. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge with us. If anybody wants to learn more from you, you've got some resources on your website. Tell me what you have going on.
Well, on my website, Dan, I have about 70 videos for owners. They're all 4 to 5 minutes long, and they cover a whole myriad of topics on how to better manage your house or your property, as well as a number of useful landlord forms. So feel free to go to my website. It's East Bay MC, PeterMaryCharlie.com.
If you missed that or you want to look it up later on, I've got a link to Mike's website on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode232. If you love this podcast and you want to support it, the best way you can do it is to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. I love reading those 5-star reviews. So if you could take 2 seconds and leave a quick review, I would be very grateful. I also want to take a second and thank our sponsor today. It's Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She is a nationwide lender, and she specializes in helping people buy rental properties. So if you're looking to add to your portfolio, or you're just trying to figure out how to get started and how to buy your first rental property, Chaley can help you out, get you going, make sure you've got the best financing in place. If you want to find out more, you can go to her website. It's ridgelendinggroup.com. That's RIDGE, lendinggroup.com. And if you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will waive all of the pre-qualification fees. NMLS 42056. I'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.